From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Genius, violinist Yasha Heifetz towered musically over his century, so much so that he worried some. George Bernard Shaw heard his London debut in 1920 and wrote this in a letter. "My dear Heifetz, your recital has filled me and my wife with anxiety. If you provoke a jealous God by playing with such superhuman perfection, you will die young. I earnestly advise you to play something badly every night before going to bed instead of saying your prayers. No mere mortal should presume to play as faultlessly as that." Yasha Heifetz did not die young. He lived long and full. His life tells a fascinating story about music and genius. This hour, On Point, the life and genius of Yasha Heifetz. You can join the conversation. Can you hear it? The genius in his music. Do you know the stories behind the music? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later in the hour, we will hear today from the great modern virtuoso violinist Itzhak Perlman on his thoughts and interactions with the master, Yasha Heifetz. But joining me first from New York is Peter Rosen, filmmaker and documentarian. He's directed hundreds of films. Out now on DVD is his latest called Yasha Heifetz, God's Fiddler. Peter Rosen, thanks so much for being here.
Hello, Tom.
And with us from London is Arthur Vered, biographer, psychologist, and top Yasha Heifetz scholar. His acclaimed biography of the violinist is titled simply Yasha Heifetz. Arthur Vered in London, welcome to On Point. Great to have you with us.
Hi, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let's listen to what a few folks have had to say and to a little bit of Heifetz's words themselves from Peter Rosen's film God's Fiddler. One of the top performers in the world today, Israeli violinist Ivri Gitlis, sharing his thoughts here on Yasha Heifetz.
Heifetz was certainly one of the most wonderful instruments in the hands of God, if there is one. And we had this boy, this little Jewish boy from Vilna, play like a god, so much. Or a goddess, or just a god-given gift to the god-forsaken world.
There's a way with words and more right there. And here, also from God's Fiddler, famous violinist Ida Haendel revered Heifetz as one of the best because he could always play it right.
It is so accurate. There was not one note that was slightly off. He knew how to treat the bow. That's the point, that he had the mastery of keeping the bow on the strings with such great intensity and yet so smooth.
Mastery, the word there from Ida Haendel, and here from Peter Rosen's documentary, God's Fiddler. This is actor Peter Van Horn voicing Yasha Heifetz's personal musings on what it means to master the violin.
To master the violin means to me the ability to make the violin a perfectly controlled instrument. The artist must always be superior to his instrument. It must be his servant, one that he can do with what he will.
Do with what he will, and hear the voice of Heifetz himself. This is from a 1970 interview in Paris, the virtuoso saying that he sought perfection in every sound, and he worked to sell that to the public.
I'm selling something to the public, and if I am not sold myself, then I can't sell it. I have to be convinced myself. And then if I don't sell it, then one or two things. Either I didn't do it properly, or they didn't get it.
Yasha Heifetz, the great violinist. We're going to hear a lot of music in this hour, and it is quite wonderful. Peter Rosen, I have to say as well, for a filmmaker, this much must have been really a delight because he was not only a violin genius master, he was a huge photography and very early movie-making buff with his home movie camera. There is a ton of footage here from his own life taken by himself and the friends around him, Peter.
You know, it's true, and that's one of the reasons we made the film, Tom. We, at first, you know, I had some doubts whether there'd be enough material to do this, and then I found in the basement of the Colburn School out in Los Angeles, 10 cans of old 16-millimeter film. And to my great surprise, those were Heifetz's own home movies that he had taken from the time he was a teenage camera fiend all the way up until, you know, the 80s when he lived in Los Angeles.
And give us a sense of how he looks in some of those early ones. I mean, we know his stern visage from his later years, but in these early ones, and these are in the 1920s, I guess, he has almost the young Yasha Heifetz has almost the look of Buster Keaton in the silent films. Rather beautiful face, big eyes, almost as though he's got eyeliner there, like silent guys did sometimes.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that didn't make it into the film, we had a whole little sequence comparing him to Buster Keaton and some of these movies cut side by side with Buster Keaton silent films. But like many other great things in this film, they ended up on the cutting room floor when you have to cut it all down to 90 minutes. And, you know, I want to say you opened your show with two of my favorite people that we interviewed, both of whom are about 90 years old now, Ida Handel and Ivry Gitlis. And that's the other frustrating thing about, you know, putting this much material into a 90-minute documentary. We could have made a whole film on Ida and her life with Heifetz, her recollections, and certainly a whole very interesting and funny film with Ivry Gitlis, who we talked to for hours and ended up probably using, what, 3 or 4 minutes in the whole film. So it's incredibly frustrating hearing those wonderful voices again and knowing what the rest of the interview is all about.
Peter Rosen's new documentary is Yasha Heifetz, God's Fiddler. We're going to look at his life. We're going to hear from Itzhak Perlman, the great violinist, in this hour. But Arthur Vered, I wish you're standing by there in London. I wish you'd speak with us about his music. What set it apart? We'll look at where this man came from. But let's get this amazing sound of Heifetz in our ears. Here's a little bit from Yasha Heifetz's 1955 performance of Johannes Brahms' first movement from his Violin Concerto in D, performed with Fritz Reiner conducting the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. This section from the final few minutes of the cadenza shows off Heifetz at his most emblematic, his strongest, most virtuosic as he takes his solo. Breathtakingly beautiful. Arthur Vered, he was a sensation right from the beginning in Vilnius, Lithuania, then part of Russia, in St. Petersburg, here in this years later with the Chicago Symphony. What was it about this man's playing, Arthur?
Indeed, this is actually his first stereophonic recording in 1956. Mm-hmm. I mean, the playing speaks for itself. The penetrating sound, the accuracy, the risks he actually took in live performance, no cutting corners, no shortcuts, the absolutely perfect intonation. I mean, if you played the first seconds of any violinist, it will be a fiddler playing. If you played Heifetz, you'll know immediately it's Heifetz, it's nobody else. So the quality of the tone, the musicianship that he infused into his performance is just unequaled.
Who planted that, or did he have it in his fingers from the moment he took up the violin at age 3?
Well, he didn't have it at the age of 3, but on the violinistic side of things, obviously he was born with a tremendous talent and very, very, very hard work. That's the violin side. The musicianship comes, you know, more into adolescence and then when he became a mature musician, and that's a development. I think that more than anyone else on that side, Auer has to be credited. Leopold Auer, who was his main violin teacher, the famous Leopold Auer.
In St. Petersburg, where he went at age 7, 8, 9, 10, somewhere in there?
Yeah, about 9, 10, yes. Mm-hmm. He went to him. I think he could be credited for. Indeed, Heifetz himself credited Auer with his development and the musicianship that later on we know Heifetz for.
Leopold Auer, one of the greatest violinists, certainly teachers in Russia at that time.
Teachers.
Peter Rosen, from all the footage you've seen, all the background you've done, how did Heifetz himself explain his gift?
Well, you know, it's interesting on this when we first were approached to make this film, I had some doubts whether, as I said, we could do it because Heifetz was not, for example, like Glenn Gould, who, you know, always would seek out an interviewer, would always find out where the cameras and paparazzi were. Mm-hmm. Heifetz was very reticent to actually do interviews and to do press throughout his whole career. I think Arthur would agree. And since we didn't have a lot to go on, you know, we were trying to really research almost everything he had ever said. And frankly, in Heifetz's own words, I don't think there's a lot where he talked about his own musicianship. I don't really think he liked to talk about himself, frankly.
Peter, so hold the thought there. We have to take a short break here. Arthur Vered in London will come back and ask you that question. The new documentary is Yasha Heifetz, God's Fiddler. Here's a little bit, a 1934 recording of Heifetz with Arpad Sandor on piano. Paganini's Caprice No. 24 in A minor here. Regarded as one of the hardest pieces in a violinist's repertoire, Heifetz, also a teacher later on, demanded that all his students knew each and every Paganini Caprice by heart. Here's the master himself. 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK on Yasha Heifetz. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking today about the incomparable Yasha Heifetz, maybe the greatest violinist of the 20th century. A new documentary takes up his life and art. It's Yasha Heifetz, God's Fiddler. Behind us right here, from 1911, this is a piece, Romance, Opus 4, composed by Russian master Leopold Auer, Yasha Heifetz's most famous early teacher. This recording is the earliest of Yasha Heifetz, dates back to 1911 when he was just 10 years old and staying in St. Petersburg to learn from the best. There is the 10-year-old at play. Peter Rosen is with us, filmmaker, documentarian, is director of Yasha Heifetz, God's Fiddler. Arthur Vered is with us from London, biographer of Yasha Heifetz. His acclaimed biography titled simply Yasha Heifetz. You can join the conversation this hour. What do you think? What makes a genius like this, a musical genius? Is it there from birth? Is it a gift from God? Is it made with practice? And do you know the music, the genius of Yasha Heifetz? Let's go to our listeners. Will in Nashville, Tennessee. Will, thanks, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you, Tom, for taking my call, and thank you, Peter, for this this subject. I've got a son who is 4 and a half and has been playing since he was still 3, and so it's great to hear this subject, and I can't wait to see the documentary and watch it. It's great to see how far Heifetz took it from 3 years old and what a master he was. I just appreciate the hard work.
An inspiration to your son at 4 and a half, and there's so much great footage in this film. One more. Thank you, Will. Bernard in Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts. Bernard, you're on the air.
Hi. I think I can account vis-a-vis Shaw for his long survival. My dad once told me that when he was a teenager in Cleveland in the 30s, he was studying the violin. He took the score to a concert, and there were 2 missed notes. So the gods couldn't destroy him.
2 missed notes from Yasha Heifetz. That must have been rare. In that case, I'm sure he wasn't too happy about it. He was incredibly popular in his day. We'll talk about that. But here, just to give you a sense, this is March 1942, a radio broadcast. Yasha Heifetz, then fully becoming a household name in the United States and around the world, made an appearance on the Jack Benny Show, a straight-laced musician to Benny's outlandish comedy.
Mr. Heifetz, I'd like to introduce myself. My name is Benny.
Benny?
Yes, Jack Benny. I'm a violinist, too, you know.
Oh, yes. You're a radio comedian, aren't you?
Oh, well, I do dabble in radio occasionally, but my real talent lies in the field of music. And incidentally, I do want to congratulate you on your rendition of those two selections.
Thank you so much.
Which I had intended to play.
Well, I'm sorry that happened. If you'd spoken to me before this program, I could have substituted other numbers.
Well, it doesn't really make any difference because I have other numbers up my sleeve too, brother.
Jack Benny mixing it up with a pretty good sport there in Yasha Heifetz. Arthur Vered, take us to this issue of how Heifetz saw his own musicianship, his own handling of the violin and its origins. What can you tell us?
Well, the example that you played earlier, the 10-year-old Heifetz playing in St. Petersburg, it's a very, very good example of what Auer instilled in him and in other stellar pupils as well. This singing quality, this vocalistic quality. Mm. In fact, this was one of Auer's main insistences. You have to sing on the violin. And I think Heifetz does it to perfection. Just a sequel, incidentally, to that Jack Benny skit. Mm-hmm. It happened in 1942 during the war, and it was done for the armed forces. And that was the only reason why Heifetz agreed to take part in it. Because after the war in the 50s, Jack Benny, who also lived somewhere in Beverly Hills next to Heifetz, asked him repeatedly to do it again on television or on radio, and Heifetz steadfastly refused to repeat it. He said it's only for the armed forces.
Wow. I want to look at that as well. We've got a little bit from Heifetz himself. This is 1970 in conversation about violin technique and sharing her personal thoughts on the most important facets of a life on the violin and beyond it, something here he considered to be missing from too much of the world.
Discipline is important for your life anyway, for living. In fact, I think discipline is important for enjoying life. You almost have to refuse yourself a few things. Even if you could get it, you should refuse it. In other words, to say, if I have something good or the other, let's divide it if we can, you know, not all at once. I'll have a little for tomorrow, a little for the next day, so that I will enjoy each one fully. We have too many comforts.
We have too many comforts. Of course, he was living in Beverly Hills with a beach house in Malibu. Richard in Stanton, Virginia, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, nice hearing the program. I take a little exception to the comment that Heifetz didn't say very much. He said so much, and it's a matter of listening to his music and you see inside him. But I was married to a concert violinist, and she and I had many discussions about what makes great violin music. And I think many violinists forget the word play, the playing part, the playfulness that comes in a, you know, there's a difference between, shall we say, sticking to the score and actually playing it that comes out of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that I think is so important to a great violinist music. And I think it's the essence of what Heifetz was saying. He was playing. He was having good fun.
Well, yes, play, but there's also that discipline word. Peter Rosen, we see the man at play. In some of the early movie footage you show, I think he was in Narragansett, and he's out. He says he loves to go out early in the morning with a nice automobile, and this is a very, very early automobile. Feel the wind in your face. I mean, he's playful in many of the instances that you show, but in that early life, even in the U.S., after his family had escaped from Russia, right across, west to east on the Trans-Siberian, I guess, he's in the States. His family, his father, is still very much with him and controlling, and this was a big deal to him.
No, you know, it's true. And the reason we actually used a fair amount of the playful footage in the sort of flapper era in the 20s of Heifetz, we did find a turning point, you know, in his life because, you know, he had this God-given gift and he knew that as a child and he had been praised and never had a bad review for his whole life. And we wanted to make the first act of the film, you know, about that carefree period of, you know, a young man who was really the center of the attention in the musical world. But we did find an important moment when he finally did get a bad review. And this was, by a critic named Henderson in the New York Sun in the early 20s. And for us, the whole rest of the film sort of hinged on the fact that we had this guy who could do no wrong, was, you know, revered, really was the greatest violinist in the world by the time he was known as the greatest violinist by the time he was 17. I know you came out of the break saying maybe the greatest violinist of the 20th century. It's interesting, you know, Tom, when we talked to a lot of violinists about this project, that, you know, I had done films on some great pianists like Arthur Rubinstein, some great yes. conductors like Toscanini. There's always a debate on who the greatest opera singer is, you know, Pavarotti or Caruso, or whether Richter, Gilels, Van Cliburn, Horowitz were the greatest pianists. But I found in talking to violinists, there is no debate about Heifetz, curiously enough. Across the board, they all think Heifetz was the greatest violinist, not maybe the greatest violinist. So this is what really intrigued me about, you know, this project, to look into how could someone maintain that reputation and basically convince the music community that no one was better and no one was ever going to equal what he did on stage.
Well, you're more deeply steeped than I. You know, there's always some hesitation for an amateur like myself. I mean, after all, we're going to be talking in just a couple of minutes here with Itzhak Perlman, no slouch himself. Arthur Vered, that Henderson Review in New York did come kind of like a thunderclap to Heifetz. He'd been living in California, the life had been good, and then here comes this tough review, and as Peter Rosen's film shares with us, he took it on board very deeply, very seriously. He was shaken by it, Arthur.
Indeed, he was, yes. He was living at the time in New York, but that's beside the point. That review came after a period of time in which, as Heifetz put it at the time, you know, I had to grow up to have a childhood, because he didn't recall having a particularly nice or carefree childhood.
Sort of a Michael Jackson story here, where he'd been driven so hard in his youth.
Indeed, yes. So, and he was enjoying himself, and for a year or two or three, he was really enjoying it. He was the center of attention everywhere. And the practice and the violin was put a bit aside. He was going on automatic, as it were, giving concerts, playing because he played the way he could play. Until this boy, this Henderson guy, very perceptive, realized that he was losing the music behind the technical, you know, know-how. Mm-hmm. He received it as a blow because it was the first really bad review that he ever encountered. And I know from firsthand witnesses, he really, really took it that bad that he didn't know where to go, and he actually considered suicide.
Wow. But did not, and went on. He maybe became tougher on himself. He was certainly tough on students. We've got a little tape here showing some of that. He could be quite severe, sometimes in a playful way, but not exactly fun play. This is from a 1962 video taken of a Heifetz masterclass. This was at the University of Southern California, recording of the first movement of Henri Vuitton's Violin Concerto in D minor. It shows Heifetz and his accompanist, Brooks Smith, reproducing note for note and mockingly a flawed audition from a recent applicant to his class. Here's Heifetz introducing the piece. Think Simon Cowell.
The limitation of an audition that I had to hear. It's exaggerated, but not too much.
With Brooks Smith making pretty brutal fun of some young violinist who's not in the room at that point, with that mocking rendition of the painful thing he had heard, and notoriously tough on his students. When they came to class, they had to know this Paganini, that Paganini. Here, also from the 1962 masterclass, the student stands up and he says, "What have you got for me today?" Students fumbling around, not sure what to offer something. Heifetz asked for something else entirely, and these are among the most difficult violin pieces in the world.
Which Paganini have you played recently? The etudes, I mean.
Oh, that the number 11?
Was that the 11? Yeah. You played the 17?
Not now.
Well, which one do you have in your fingers?
None of them.
Good. Play 17.
Yes, that's a good one.
17.
You play 17? Oh, not now. Oh, good. Play it. Oh, my gosh. Peter Rosen, I watched that in your film, and I thought, whoa, to be in that student's shoes, how could one even begin to play Paganini that one didn't know for Jascha Heifetz?
Yeah, you know, we were lucky that the students from that class, which, you know, lasted up through the 60s in California, many of them, of course, are still around and active performers. So we had a list of about 50 students. I think for the film we interviewed about 30, and about 10 actually, you know, made it into the film and didn't end up on the cutting room floor. That's a wonderful scene, and it's great to see as well as to hear, because it's Arthur Friedman, who was a went on to become one of Heifetz's few students that actually, you know, had a major career. It's interesting because the classroom dynamic, when I saw those films at first, Tom, I said, you know, do we really want to put them in this documentary? Because they looked kind of phony. You know, they were mm-hmm. lit. They were shot with the old-fashioned mm-hmm. TV cameras. There yep. was a kind of curtain in the background. It wasn't really in the classroom. So I had some doubts about that. Then as we talked to students around the country, and I asked them that question, I said, you know, what do you think about these filmed master classes? And they said, you know, Peter, that's exactly the way it was. Nothing there was out of the ordinary or faked for the cameras. He was really, really like that in the classroom. So when I heard that, you know, we actually had to have a pretty good liberal sampling of some of the kind of moments from that classroom.
Arthur Verrid, was he unusually, I'm not sure of the word, tyrannical, tough for a violin teacher? I mean, after all, they're not known for being patty cake people.
He was tough on them. He used to say that those students, that he, Heifetz, is the first hurdle they must overcome if they want to become performers. And if they can handle him and you know, pass through his class, then they will make it. And that's why, one of the reasons, why he made it so, so difficult on them.
And it was a tough hurdle indeed. We're listening to Jascha Heifetz looking at his life. He had a second life. As Jim Hoyle, he wrote popular music and traveled anonymously that way sometimes as well. 1943 recording here, Jascha Heifetz on piano, not violin, playing one of his own compositions, very popular tune entitled When You Make Love to Me. Arthur Verrid, what was this sidelight? What were we seeing here in this second musical life of Heifetz?
Well, specifically about this piece, this is the outcome of actually a bet that Heifetz had with a friend that he could actually write a tune, a modern tune, and be successful with it, because he got the gist of what is required in light music. Mm-hmm. And he wrote this music, this piece, and it did very well in the hit parade at the time.
It was picked up by Bing Crosby, who...
It was.
...who made it one of his own. We're going to take a listen to that as well. Arthur Verrid, it's great to have you there, author of the biography, Jascha Heifetz, joining us today from London. Peter Rosen is with us. His new book is Jascha Heifetz, God's Fiddler. When we come back from a short break here, we're going to talk with the terrific violinist who knew Jascha Heifetz, Itzhak Perlman, will join us. And listeners, you can join us as well. Musicians, violinists, what do you hear from Jascha Heifetz in Heifetz? What made him Heifetz? What was it about his touch, his technique, his talent that set him apart? What do you make of the foibles of his genius, the obsession with perfection, the intolerance of anything but? Was this the Steve Jobs of the violin world in that way? We're at 1-800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Here's Bing Crosby singing the Heifetz composition, When You Make Love to Me, very popular. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
You pretend so well. How can I let you go? Somehow it can't be true that you deceive. When you make love to me, please don't make believe.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today about the incomparable Jascha Heifetz, lauded as the greatest violinist of the 20th century. A new documentary takes up his life, his genius, his art. It is called Jascha Heifetz, God's Fiddler. Peter Rosen, the director, is with us today. Arthur Verrett is with us, biographer of Jascha Heifetz, biography titled The Same, joins us today from London. You can join us as well. What do you hear in this music? What's your question for Itzhak Perlman on Heifetz? Itzhak Perlman joins us in just a moment. We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Lots of wonderful response here. Lucretia writes that she's sitting in Nashville. She says, my boyfriend owns Nashville violins, and we're sitting here surrounded by beautiful violins listening to this fascinating story, and we would add absolutely beautiful music. Behind us right here, recorded in Hollywood, December of 1954, Jascha Heifetz's performance of Giovanni Scambati's Serenata Neapolitana No. 2, played there with pianist Brooks Smith. Here's another comment on the web from Asen, who writes, I remember taking my grandmother to his concert, Heifetz's concert, at Powell Hall in St. Louis. After the concert, he made himself available, and my grandmother told him how much she enjoyed his playing the last time she saw him in Stockholm. He toured the world when it was still by steamship. One of those who knew him, and knew him rather well, and maybe one of the few whose playing is up in that realm, joins us right now from New York. Itzhak Perlman is here, Emmy and Grammy Award-winning virtuoso violinist and conductor, one of the preeminent violinists of the 20th and now 21st centuries. He teaches master classes in the Perlman Music Program and at the Juilliard School. Itzhak Perlman, it's absolutely an honor to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks. It's nice to be here.
How did you know Heifetz?
Well, the first time I met him was I was about 14 years old, and I was studying at Juilliard before Juilliard was in this location. It was up on the 122nd Street and Claremont Avenue in New York, and my teacher at that time, one of my teachers, Galamian, invited me to play for Heifetz, and that was the first time that I met him, and I played stuff for him, and he was the old, you know, he always was interested in the process of practicing, because he was such a strict practicer himself.
Yes,
you know, it was practicing for him was you know, basically a way of life. It was a religion, and so when I played for him, you know, some repertoire. I remember, I think I played Lalo's Symphony Espanol, and I did a Caprice of Paganini.
Mm-hmm.
And Galamian said, "Okay, you can go now." And Heifetz says, not so fast. Not so fast. I'd like to hear some scales.
Just scales. Scales. Simple
that
scales.
Was for him, yeah. The most important thing, you know, do I know my scales? And luckily, I was, you know, my first teacher in Israel was of Russian background, and she believed in scales. And then I used to practice scales an hour a day at least, just for scales. So my scales were all set. And so
your ticket to his affection or admiration.
Oh, absolutely. You know, that's I think that was probably the reason why we sort of hit it off very well, because he admired the fact that I knew my scales.
can you, Itzhak Perlman, it's such a treat to have you. Could you describe with some nuance what it is about scales? I mean, for musicians will know, but for many people you think do, re, mi, what's the big deal? What is the essence of what he would be listening for? Jascha Heifetz, when he's listening to Itzhak Perlman's scale, what's he listening to here?
Well, he listens to cleanliness. Mm-hmm. I mean, because I don't think there was anybody since or before who played with such, intonation accuracy. It was incredible. But the thing about Heifetz that, you know, I'm sure you probably will ask this question, so I'm answering it ahead.
Dive in ahead
of schedule.
Okay.
The thing about Heifetz that made him, quote, Heifetz, was that there was nobody since and nobody after or before that would sound like him. That's you know, I know that's it sounds extremely simplistic, but the style of his playing was not a style of, you know, it was not a generic style. As a matter of fact, what I find interesting about it is that it wasn't right away. He didn't play like that right away because it did develop. But the thing is, if you listen to some of his old recordings, he does sound a little bit like what was going on at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you listen, you know, you hear a little bit of Chrysler, you hear a little bit of this old-fashioned kind of slide.
Yes. And
sort of a laid-back, kind of beautiful kind of playing. But then he started to develop his own kind of style, and it then became so identifiable for me. You know, the first person for me that I could ever identify is Heifetz.
How would you describe it? What made it unique?
What made it unique is the energy. First of all, there was a particular energy to the way he phrased, and that energy came into his sound as well. There was a kind of his use of vibrato was something that nobody's ever done before. And then, you know, when people try to do it right now, it's not original because it's him. In other words, you know, it's one of those things where you cannot imitate Heifetz because it's just not good.
Would you listen with us, Itzhak Perlman, if you'd be so kind? We've got a piece of music. I'd love to just listen for a moment, some Bach here, and then get your reading on what we're hearing. And this is a stunning performance. This is December 1953. Yasha Heifetz playing the second movement of Bach's first violin concerto, A minor, with Arthur Wallenstein conducting the Los Angeles Philharmonic, 1953. We're transported. Itzhak Perlman, tell us why. What is going on there?
Well, a couple of things. What's going on there is pure Heifetz. That's what's going on there. So therefore, you know, some people would say, oh, well, you know, this is not Bach. This is, he was sliding and he was doing stuff like that. But the power of his playing is so incredible that in my mind, it doesn't matter. I just love to listen to what he has to say himself. You know, his personality in this music is so strong that it basically, he doesn't care about, you know, what he's playing. You know, he cares about how he's playing. And the thing is that it's in wonderful taste, but not necessarily the style is Heifetz.
We heard his words earlier saying he's always reaching for the audience. He wants to grab them. Is the performer reaching out with his style of play to grab the audience emotionally?
Well, the thing is that I believe that a performer grabs the audience if that performer believes in what he or she is doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if you believe strongly in what you're doing, and what you're doing is passionate, and there is absolutely no ambivalence as to how you're doing it, you will get to your audience, and that's what Heifetz did. He got to his audience, and I know that a lot of people used to say that he was a very cold kind of player, and that was strictly because of the way he looked on stage. You know, he did not move much, you know, because he was a pure technician.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you're a technician, he didn't move. He just did what he had to do with his hands. He didn't, you know, a lot of people today have a tendency to do a lot more, moving and sort of showing musically what they're doing.
But close your eyes and it's all there. Close your eyes and the dynamism is incredible.
Exactly. I mean, he wasn't cold. He was the hardest player that ever played.
Itzhak Perlman, stand by. We have listeners with questions and comments for you in particular. But first, Don in Norfolk, Massachusetts, you're on the air with Itzhak Perlman, listening to Yasha Heifetz.
Yes, hello. It's a pleasure. Hi, Tom. And on the subject of his incredible strictness with students, when I was studying violin at Juilliard myself, I had a fellow student in my studio who my teacher told us about who went to L.A. to audition for him. He went into the audition and I think he asked for something like a C major scale. He played but two or three notes. Heifetz stopped him and said, come back when you've learned how to use the whole bow, and he kicked him out, and he had to come out, trek all the way back to New York. I believe he ultimately went on to study with him, but that is the level of strictness that was Heifetz. He did not allow him to play another note in the audition.
Two or three notes, come back when you've learned the whole bow. Itzhak Perlman, what do you say to that? Is that too much? Is that a martinet, or is that just...
Well, it's extreme, but the thing is that it makes a point, and the point is that in order for you to be, you know, the best musician that you can be, you know, you have to have the equipment to do it, you know. And he was, you know, he was a strict believer in that, you know, in order for you to do something musical, you have to have technically the, you know, the ability to do it. And therefore, that starts with scales and with the way you use the bow, et cetera, et cetera. So I suppose he didn't want to bother with the doing the basic stuff. He wanted, you know, he wanted to start working on something after the basic technique is there. So I suppose that's his style. You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
His style as a teacher.
He was happy to dive in with the greats, of course, a virtuoso himself, but a number of recordings with other famous players. And here's a bit from Tchaikovsky's first movement from his Piano Trio No. 1. This was performed in 1950 by Heifetz, plus pianist Arthur Rubinstein and the great cellist Gregor Piotrowski. Heifetz, Rubinstein, Piotrowski there with Tchaikovsky. Wow. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Guy in Alexandria, Virginia. Thanks for calling, Guy. You're on the air with Itzhak Perlman, Arthur Vered, and Peter Rosen.
Hi, Tom. Earlier, one of your guests talked about how playfulness was manifested in Heifetz's playing, and I wanted to relate very quickly a story that illustrates that Itzhak Perlman possessed just the same, and maybe even to a greater degree. My daughter and I met Itzhak Perlman purely by chance in Florida, poolside, many years ago. And my daughter, who was playing Suzuki and was just your run-of-the-mill violinist, was in rapture by the fact that Itzhak Perlman was there. She'd seen him on Sesame Street, had known about him for many years, and so she wanted desperately to get his autograph. When we approached Itzhak Perlman, my daughter got shy, and I was standing there by myself looking like some stalker asking for an autograph, somebody about my age.
The father's
and,
duty.
He looked at me like, what are you doing here? Knowing all the while he could see my daughter in the background. But he very graciously gave us the autographs. The next day, she said, well, if he's back by the pool, do you think I get my picture so my friends will actually believe it's his autograph? So I appeared again by Itzhak Perlman. He looked up at me and goes, oh, my God, not you again. Knowing that my daughter was over there getting ready to pose for the picture. But he just has an incredible sense of humor and a great deal of warmth. And in the end, he was extremely kind to us. Neither of us will ever forget that, Mr. Perlman. Very appreciative.
It's a wonderful story, and it makes a great point. But somehow, Itzhak Perlman, I don't know. You put Yasha Heifetz in the same circumstance. Would we have had that kind of outcome?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea. He was a very formal person, mm-hmm. very formal. And I remember when I played for him at Juilliard, you know, that story I told you.
Yes.
Obviously, afterwards, I asked him, you know, if he would send me an autographed picture. And he said, absolutely. And then he sent it to me. I still have it, you know, I have it in my studio when I teach. And it says, with friendly greetings. And I know that he didn't just write it out. He thought about it. Knowing Heifetz, he probably practiced about an hour.
Yeah, just to write that greeting.
To write it and to make sure that it was orderly, that it was perfectly tuned.
It's beautiful.
So it was very formal.
Yeah, yeah. Peter?
Tom, I wanted to ask Itzhak something because I didn't ask this in the interview we did with him for the film, and I've been dying to
know the answer.
We
have just a minute, so make it quick, Peter.
Yeah, there's a lot of rumors about Heifetz along the lines of whether he was really friendly or not. And is it true, Itzhak, because this is in music folklore, and everybody tells this story, that when you went to visit Heifetz as many times in a studio in L.A., that he made your wife, Toby, wait in the car?
That was the first time. That was the first time, she didn't wait in the car. She just waited outside while we talked inside. But that was the very, very first time, and that was before we were married. And again, he was very formal. You know, if we were married, he would probably invited both of us. But because it wasn't, it wasn't the case, he didn't. So, but that was the very first time, and since then, everything was. You know, he would always ask me how Toby was doing, and so on and so forth. So that was, these things happen. And
let me tell you, from the movie itself, you can see how he did reach out in an enormous way. For example, during World War II, he was in the field of combat playing in really rough conditions, these beautiful concerts. You can hear, this is a little bit from the Second World War, Armed Forces Radio Network program, Command Performance, introducing Heifetz playing the popular Ave Maria. And you can hear that the ordinary troops, picture this in Iraq or Afghanistan, we're happy to hear this guy.
Well, fellas, for the many thousands of you who've asked for a certain song and a certain great violinist, Command Performance sends you the Ave Maria and Yasha Heifetz.
We're not talking top 40, but we're talking the tip-top of the classical music world, the great, great violinist there. What a wonderful hour this has been, and I'm so grateful to each of you. Itzhak Perlman, totally great in and of yourself. It's wonderful of you to be with us and share a few reminiscences today. Thank you so much.
It was a great pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Arthur Vered, author of the great biography, Yasha Heifetz, joining us today from London. Thank you so much, Mr. Vered.
My pleasure, Tom.
Peter Rosen, director of Yasha Heifetz, God's Fiddler. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, and this film will be on American Masters on PBS, part of the NPR family, sometime late this year or early next year.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.